Are you the quantum mechanics?
Yes, we're the quantum mechanics. We're the paranormal podcast for the believers, the doubters, and everyone in between. I had quite a few comments last week about our last week's episode on the supernatural submarines. Lots of people picking up on what we talked about, that it, especially that one with the sea monster, it all felt very Jules Verne.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, very, very crafted as a tale.
There was a bit of me, I did research it and I did look it up on multiple sources. There was a bit of me going, is this a creepypasta story or something?
Oh, like, yeah, I hadn't thought of that, yes. Yeah,
there was something about it. Well, maybe not that story, but the first two, I did wonder if there was any creepypasta elements. But I did find them in multiple and reputable sources, so who knows? So,
well, like I said, the Muller Light book of research, yeah.
Brought to you by Muller Light. I also wanted to thank Cameron Sadler, who's joined us as a Patreon, as a mechanics assistant.
Thank you very much, Cameron, and has extended a lovely invitation to maybe join them on a ghost hunt later in the year. So,
yeah, we'll look into that. Yeah. That's quite an interesting one, isn't it?
Very interesting one, yes.
It's funny now, I've got this thing, because obviously we've got our field trip coming up. I've got this thing that I don't want to talk about anything that we're going to do in the future in case we scupper
it. For fear of jinxing it, yes. Yeah. No, we won't. No, we'll thank you now, Cameron, and we'll keep talking about that.
Cool. Brilliant.
So last week you were talking about hiding beneath the waves.
Yeah.
This week we're talking about hiding completely with invisibility.
Oh, nice.
And a story about somebody who claimed to have had an invisible machine, or a machine which created invisibility, and disappeared someone and they never came back.
Oh, weird.
I know. But whenever anybody says invisibility, I always think, like, I think people these days think about Harry Potter, don't they? And the invisibility cloak.
Put the cloak on and then you disappear.
Exactly. But I think growing up, I always thought about invisibility in terms of, I don't know, there were cartoon characters who could become invisible. There was the Invisible Man on the television.
Yeah.
And it didn't seem like something, like, when you're young, it felt like, oh, that's completely achievable. And then when you start realizing about the world, about eight, you're like, oh, it's never going to happen, is it?
I also think of those invisible man type things, you know, where you've got the glasses and the hat and you can't see anything underneath.
Yes.
Or those, the really bad effects before the days of CGI, where you'd see a gun just floating around on a piece of string. Do you know what I mean?
Right. So the problem with that, I always felt, and even as a kid, I realised this. So the Invisible Man, you're right, he has to put, to be seen, he has to wrap himself in a bandage, doesn't he?
Yeah, like his face. Mummy.
So does that mean he walks around naked?
Well, yeah, exactly.
That's odd, isn't it?
It is odd. Well, I guess it's not odd as long as you can control when you're invisible and when you're visible. It's pretty tough in the winter, though.
I'd think if you're walking around invisible, even if you're invisible, you'd walk into a room and go, I've got my tackle out. Or it'd be like sort of so cold. It just doesn't seem like a practical thing.
It's a bit Operation U-Tree, isn't it?
But if he is fully clothed, how come those clothes are invisible
and not the gun?
Exactly.
Is it a fabric thing? What? So anyone who's listening, I do just want to point out, Ben, you are not wearing clothes. And you've rematerialised.
No, I did
which
that.
Which is a bit disturbing.
I did that on purpose. I thought the podcast would sound different if I was naked.
Yeah. Who would know?
Who would possibly know?
Apart from me.
This chair is a little sticky, but apart from that.
Oh, no.
No, it's all right. It's just like riding around in, you know, your 1970s cars when you wore shorts.
Yes.
These are just so painful. It's okay. But look, in all seriousness, 2006, two groups of researchers, University of St Andrews and another Imperial College and Duke University, they demonstrated that theoretically, it's possible to make an optical invisibility cloak. So I should point out, all the way through this, we're talking about optical invisibility. So I'm not talking about planes that deflect radar or anything like that, just optical invisibility.
Are you going to get on? Because there's some tanks that do this, aren't there? I don't know if it's... It depends on your level of invisibility, doesn't it? Where does camouflage become invisibility? There's a question.
We're talking about true... So the object remains, but you can't see it. So in this respect, the research they were talking about, They said the cloaks were spherical objects made of materials tailored to guide light round like a hidden region as if it encountered nothing at all. So that is almost like what you're talking about, the tanks. It's not a mirror. It's like you bend the light so so the thing isn't there. And like they say, the principle is like a mirage on a sunny day. The heat on the pavement changes the density of the air above it, causing light from the sun to follow a curved path, making it look like there's water on the road.
But is that the same thing of those ship and boat mirages where they look like they're floating above the sea?
Similar principle. And in a more sort of advanced and almost Star Trek-y kind of way, apparently it's been shown that it's possible to make an optical wormhole that acts like an invisible tunnel that conveys light from one end of a region of space to another. And these same design tools have been used to model black holes. Yeah,
so I'm going to have to pause you there a little bit. Sorry, is this a theoretical thing, or has somebody managed to produce one of these?
It's a model.
Right.
So they haven't produced it, but they've shown that it's possible.
It's possible, wow.
Yeah, and it's also been very... I was interested to know when people started writing about it as well. Mm. First story, apparently, to a scientifically attempt invisibility, written in 1959 by the author Fitz James O'Brien. He's quite famous, Irish-American guy. He wrote a story about a boarding house haunted by an invisible monster and attempted to justify how such a monster might exist using what little was known about optics at the time. So I think what we're going to get into is where... the reality meets like the science fiction, because usually, obviously, science fiction quite often leads the way, and people are like, "Oh, that's cool!" Like the Star Trek holodeck, people have been trying to recreate
or
that.
Like the replicator thing that kind of creates food from particles and all that kind of stuff. So, what you're saying though, that was in 1955, or whatever it was. You're saying the
that
idea
was
of
1859.
Okay. So I guess the idea of invisible creatures goes back before that, but that one was trying to almost have some true science fiction behind it.
Exactly, it was trying to justify...
Science fiction rather than fantasy.
Rather than fantasy, yes, that's correct. Right. And part of that, as you look at various articles about this, X-rays, 1895, they convinced many people that scientists would be looking through their clothing. Yes. So people are buying like X-ray proof underwear. So there's this whole kind of... The reason I made a big deal about this being optical spectrum is that people kind of get it confused, and like X-rays can see through things. Yeah. Will people be able to see through me? Can I be invisible? There's a whole thing going on in the late 1800s where invisibility is a thing. And that turns into something which becomes a bit of a... I hesitate to say a flap, but it becomes an interest in the 1930s. So this excitement, I think, goes some way to explain where we end up with this newspaper article from October 1936. Invisibility at last within the grasp of man. Two Hungarian scientists, it says, solve age-old quests with devices worthy of Arabian Nights wizards. So quite often, these things, these scientific inventions, even if they're pseudoscience, and we'll come on to whether they are or not, refers back to like the magical, the mysterious, and fairy tales.
A bit in a similar way that kind of almost the same way a tabloid treats UFOs or paranormal stories, isn't it? There's either the humour element to it or some kind of romanticism tongue-in-cheek about them.
Well, as we shall see from this, tabloids do play a part in how this comes about. But this article goes on to say, in a demonstration of this machine, recently the stage was set with a backdrop of wide red and white stripes. A chair lifted from among the onlookers so that all could see that it was genuine was placed in front of this conspicuous background. Then a young man, and this made me laugh, a very substantial young man, who had been walking around among the onlookers, stepped onto the stage and sat down in the chair. Soon he grew dim in appearance, became sort of thin vapour, so the striped background was visible through the outlines of his body. Then he disappeared completely. But the chair remained.
Right, I was going to say, the chair remained. Oh, wow, all right.
As well as that, the young man continued talking to the onlookers as an evidence of his presence. His disappearance, nevertheless, was to all intents and purposes so absolutely real that when the inventor called on the operator of the machine to bring the young man back to sight, one of the onlookers exclaimed, "But suppose you should ever fail to bring him back, what then?" But the operator did bring back the young man, only to try the experiment all over again, but this time the young man moved out, did a few jig steps with his feet. The disappearing effect began with his head and slowly worked down over his body until only his feet were left dancing about.
How weird. I'm assuming he was clothed.
In this instance, yes, he was.
They'd certainly say if he wasn't, wouldn't they?
Yes. The inventor said it's a combination of lights and shadows. The machine produces rays of invisible light, some rays of great intensity, some of minor intensity. They play one against the other. And the reporter says, anyway, it seems like magic. Another Hungarian by the name of Stephen Pribble, remember that name, he's going to become important,
okay,
a professor of optics, has invented a machine producing invisible rays. This machine has the effect of making parts of an object apparently fade away, leaving the insides exposed. So this is like, this is the first time that there appears to be a reportage of something like this happening on stage, which is talked about in a way that isn't magic. It's spoken about as an experiment that is being demonstrated.
And that last bit that you mentioned, that does sound a bit like, oh my God, you know, like an X-ray of people are going to be able to see through my clothes and see, you know, that implication of that last story. It's weird that Hungary's a hotbed of that activity at that time in this field.
Yes, it is. It is. And it's also weird that a reporter should be writing so exuberantly, isn't it? Don't you think?
Yes.
There's a reason for this.
Okay. All right, because there was a few things going through my mind. If it was real, then, you know, obviously we'd probably know more about it.
The demonstration itself was real, I can tell you that. This happened.
So there's a couple of things running through my mind. So if it happened, it's reminding me of how mentalists like Derren Brown and stuff kind of merge magic with hypnotism, with other things, do you know what I mean? And it's that idea of almost passing it off as a scientific experiment where it's just a really good trick, maybe.
I'll tell you this much, there is a machine involved, and the machine does do something.
Okay.
But let's move back to Stephen Pribble.
We're going to come back to that, though, aren't we?
We're going to come back to that.
Good, all right, God, because you get me worried then.
No.
I thought you disappeared.
He's the... Just the middle bit, luckily. Yeah. I found a sock, it's fine. Yeah. He becomes known as the Invisibility Man. And not, well, you will find out how famous he becomes. I can owe part of the telling of this story to a brilliant blog I found called Jot101. I appreciate the name of your blog, people. And the author of this blog starts by telling us that he's looking at three photographs from the photo archive of the newspaper El Mundo of Argentina. The other thing you need to know is that these photographs are dated the 1st of April. Now, don't get excited. This isn't an April Fool's gag. It's just a brilliant piece of...
Is that just a coincidence?
Coincidence, yes. Yeah. According to the typewritten labels on the back of each photograph, Pribble placed three objects, a teddy bear, a bronze statuette, and an opaque china vase into this apparatus, basically a wooden box fronted by a picture frame, behind which is a sort of slatted, it's like you can, it's so that you can show that something's disappearing, basically. It's like stripes. Out of the back of this box are electrical cables and they're connected to a supply.
See, you've got me suspicious now with the box. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. Well, you're right to be. And the photo again, so the last photo shows that all the objects have now disappeared. They're in the same place, perfectly tangible, the caption points out, but are completely invisible. So the author of this piece is claiming, so the author that this is being reported on here, not the contemporary author, is saying that they were able to feel these objects.
Right.
It would seem, however, that this is no April Fool's joke, the author says, of course, for 18 months later, in October 1936, the American magazine Modern Mechanics ran a four-page article focusing on the invisibility claims of Pribble and another Hungarian, Adam Gazowski. And this is the article I just quoted from at the beginning. So this is the first time that an American newspaper is picking up on the thing. But this isn't the first time that Pribble is known. So it goes on to say that modern mechanics describe Pribble as a professor of optics, which implies that he was a university teacher. But it also seems unlikely that any academic institution would look favourably upon one of its staff touring America for 18 months or more with such preposterous claims.
Right.
There's no evidence that Pribble, who looks no more than 35 in his photo, ever carved out a career as a scientist. What happened to him? Did he adopt a stage name, become a magician, or did he return to his old job? Well, then I found another piece, which is brilliantly from another blog called Flying Cars and Food Pills.
Pretty.
And this author points out the story of Pribble really kicks off and gets weird with a story on October the 20th, 1935, in a syndicated piece called American Weekly. So this is something, this is like a pull-out magazine which goes into other publications. You know, like
Reader's Digest or sort something, of, like yes. A journal of other publications. Yeah.
That's right. And this article reads, "The Vanishing Lady Who Couldn't Be Bought Back." And I've got a picture of the article here. Professor Stephen Pribble, it says. Yeah. The article, though, is honest enough to admit that this was actually bestowed on him by his press agent, the Professor Beard, was in the middle of his act in the City Park Theatre. Pribble was also an electrical engineer who the newspaper again reports his claims that his invention is not a trick with mirrors, but a real discovery about light rays. He stooped to the unorthodox approach of exhibitions only to raise money for further experiments. Mm-hmm. No question that Pribble had a showman's flair, he points out. To reassure his audience, scattered through an almost empty theatre, he first vanished and brought back a dachshund. It's always the dogs, isn't it? Poor dogs.
I thought you were going to say Datsun.
Yes, it was a Datsun Cherry.
Yeah. My first car.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Good cars.
Gold.
Nice.
Yeah.
Then a burly farmer volunteered, first handing his wallet and watch to his wife. Pribble shifted some levers. Note that no apparatus is shown in the pictures accompanying the article. And he too faded out of sight and returned, huge and whole. Both the dog barked and the farmer spoke while invisible, proving they hadn't been whisked through a trap door.
Right.
Esther Caroldi was next. She's 17. She proved to be a willing, even eager volunteer, ostensibly because she had made a bet with her father that a useful purpose could be found for an invisibility machine.
Sorry, I love that quote. It's like the equivalent of somebody going, "I've invented an invisibility machine," like on Dragon's Den or something, and you prove it works, and they all go, "No, I'm not interested, I'm out."
Yeah, Deborah Meaden's like, "What's the point in that?"
Yeah, there's going to be no use for that at all.
Well, you see, Pribble vanished Caraldi and asked her to speak from the void. He walked over, passed his hand over the chair where she should have been, and it met no resistance. "I will go crazy if I don't find where she went," Pribble is reported as crying. "Also, you will go to jail," prophesied the father. The police came and started to investigate.
Really?
Pribble had no assistance and nobody had been backstage. Apparently his consternation was real.
She had disappeared, according to the article. For real?
Well.
Wow.
The trick was all the girls. Caraldi was in love with a young man named Paul Petafi.
Incredible.
She was desperate to escape her parents' smothering control.
Wow.
And as evidenced in a planned world trip the family was about to embark on to ensure that the lovebirds couldn't get together. So this is very Romeo and Juliet, yeah. Really.
What a narrative.
A girlfriend gave her the idea. They had appeared on the stage of the theatre the year before in an amateur theatrical production. The back wall, she pointed out, had a hidden door. The girlfriend noted that the apparatus was directly in front of it, and when she attended an earlier Pribble exhibition, this is what she noted. When Caraldi vanished, she walked through the door, out the back entrance, and into a taxi. Petafi had waited for her. They were whisked off by train to an elegant hotel in Vienna. One phone call later, the defeated parents acknowledged that she had won her bet. She and Paul returned to Budapest, and Pribble was the best man at their wedding. Imagine that.
So, hold on. Let me just get this straight. Because there's some names and I'm getting a bit confused. So the guy who's doing the stage show is called
Pribble.
Pribble's doing the stage show. He doesn't know this young woman.
No.
There's the thing with the father. She kind of goes, oh, I can use this as a means to elope, you know, with my love, who my family are trying to stop. Did Pribble, who's doing the stage show, when she disappeared completely, was he like, that isn't supposed
to
happen?
He's in trouble. Yes, he's in trouble.
So was he genuinely like, oh my God, have I really invented an invisibility?
Apparently so. And the parents were like, you got us there.
And is that how the trick works? Somebody kind of walks out the back door, or is she just that was just her master plan, was it?
No, because this is such a good story. It's why it's unbelievable and why it's not true.
Oh.
The invisible hand of the press agent looms over every detail. But the story made Pribble famous all over the world.
Right.
Or, and there's more deception, assuming that was really his name. One of the odder facts about newspaper reporting before World War II, the author of this document points out, is that names, especially of non-Americans, regularly got printed with various spellings. The inventor's name was given as Stephen Pribble. So it's very hard to explain on those, but Stephen Pribble, the surname, one with two L's, one with three L's,
right.
One with just one L. Stefan Pribble with an F. Stefan Pribble with two L's. Even Steven, S-T-E-V-N, Pribble. Maybe, he points out, none of these were correct. Because the first few mentions of his invisibility ray give his name as Etienne Bribble.
Right.
Etienne is the French version of Stephen, and Bribble could simply be a typo. But the accounts that appeared in British and French newspapers are clearly write-ups of a press release, and it's odd that his name would be misspelt in his own product.
Right.
So basically, this is a press release from a press agent that is being copied second and third hand, which is why his name goes through various iterations.
So are we saying, I don't know if you are saying this, are we saying Pribble, whatever his name is, didn't exist? Or
no, he existed all right.
Okay, and he was a showman.
He was a showman.
He did do stage shows.
He did do stage shows.
He did do stage shows based on invisibility.
He did. But
that wasn't it.
But he didn't make a girl disappear. And he didn't officiate at her wedding, and the police didn't investigate him.
So the narrative of that
was crafted.
So the trick, there is no trick. The narrative is this guy makes people disappear, but he brings them back. She used that opportunity to sneak out the back door and run away.
That didn't happen.
Yeah, and then you've got, like you said, this Romeo and Juliet narrative.
So we will find out what he's up to soon. But what's really interesting is that they managed to pull out all of the mentions so we could see the development of his work. So this author says, Etienne Bribble, Stephen Pribble, they are the same person.
Right.
So from the Hartlepool Northern Daily Mail, a young Hungarian inventor, Mr. Etienne Bribble, who's only 24 years old, claims to have developed a ray in which a marble statue becomes invisible to the eye. He gave a demonstration of his statue to a representative of the paper, the Budapest Herlap, who tells how, after the rays played on the statue, it slowly disappeared. But when the newspaper man put his hand where there had been the statue, he felt it. Under further ray treatment, the statue reappeared, he says. Mr. Bribble refuses to divulge the secret of his invention, but he proposes to give a demonstration before experts. How convincing this demonstration was can be seen in a 1935 mention from the Dundee Evening Telegraph. Mr. Pribble can make objects of stone, metal, textiles, wood, a human hand, any object whatsoever, entirely invisible by placing them inside a specially prepared box, which is connected by wires to an electrical apparatus which the inventor operates. By switching on a current, the exact qualities of which Mr. Pribble does not care to divulge, the tangible objects within the small box, of which the front has been taken out, stage-like, gradually fade away and finally become entirely invisible.
That, it sounds a bit like where these sources are coming from. He's on some regional tour, doesn't he? Just kind of working with the local press.
Yes, that's exactly right. And this is why he's building up this idea that he has invented something, because in every single description that is coming up in the newspaper, we get very, very detailed observation on the invention. So we're not so much focused on like the majesty of the trick.
Yeah.
It's more what it is. So in this particular instance, again, in the box are placed objects of any description or material. A couple of electric wires lead from the demonstration box to another box placed at some distance from it. And he's, they go into detail. The second box, there's an operator on it. So there's this idea that there's something electrical going on.
Yeah.
And
the rays.
The rays. And this, the second operator is skilled enough to be able to control what is being fired at this. Yes, exactly.
It's kind of, it's almost misdirection in plain sight, isn't it? Because if you focus on the disappearance as the marvel, you do start thinking magic trick. Whereas if the focus is the science or the machine itself, it's like the machine becomes the important bit and the disappearing becomes secondary, if you know what I mean, in a weird way.
That's exactly right. And this is the intention. This is very much the intention. There are some things which when you realise later on what's happening here are completely impossible and are likely inventions, again, of a press agent. So in this particular, from this Scottish newspaper, the stripes of the background curtain seem to cover the teddy bear or the metal statue placed in front of it. Yeah. The bear, the statue, or the hand seem to melt into the background, and another moment they have vanished entirely.
This is reminding me of various street magicians who do that levitation trick. And when they film it live and you get the audience's reaction, they can, you know, they've worked out a way of doing it that makes them look like they're levitating a little bit and people go, wow. But then after they finish filming, they go back and shoot a thing and kind of wire them up to like a little crane and lift them up a lot higher than it was on when they did it live. And it's like this marvel. It's reminded me of that. He's got some invisibility trick and then it gets embellished by the press agent and, you know, various stories get thrown in that makes it bigger than the original trick was, if you're with me.
I think you're absolutely right. And from what we've come so far, it looks like he's trying to sell as a magician's illusion, isn't he? That's what it feels like,
yeah.
And he deviates from this story a couple of times, but the most sort of scientific time he comes down to this is when he's interviewed by the New York Daily News on his way to London to show off the device. And he says to the reporter, well, the reporter reports from what he's told him, that Dr. Pribble, he gives him, stumbled on the ray by accident while experimenting with mercury vacuum lamps in his Budapest laboratory. He noticed certain objects became blurry in appearance and then faded entirely from sight when subjected to rays whose exact nature he has not yet been able to determine. That sounds like the sort of thing that a stage magician would say to obfuscate what was really happening, doesn't
it? It's a bit, you know, the eighth wonder of the world.
Yes, how very convenient, says the author. But, and this I find absolutely fascinating, the newspaper coverage alone isn't what makes him famous, nor is that press article about the girl disappearing.
Right.
Pribble also appears on cigarette cards.
Right.
So I've got one here. This one is issued with Max Cigarettes, a series of 250 pictures. He is number 4, vanishing before your eyes. And it points him out. He says this wonder was worked by a Hungarian scientist, Pribble, by means of a secret ray. And it's written as a scientific piece.
And these cards, are they themed? Is there a... Is it like magician's theme or is it a science theme? Or
it's a science theme. So I did some research on this. So cigarette cards, incredibly popular in England. 5,000 series of cards issued by all sorts of different manufacturers. And by the 1930s, science and technology were the hot topics.
Right.
The 250 cards in the set which Pribble appears in are called The Age of Power and Wonder, and they were published between 35 and 38. And as I say, Pribble made card number 4. And that means that he made an immediate splash in the public consciousness. This was not something to be fooled around with. I know it seems bizarre now that cigarette cards would have any kind of validity, but they do, because they're put alongside, you know, proper inventors and, yeah, you know, Marconi and people like that. They all appear in this.
It's a shame we don't do more of that these days, you know, things in, not the cigarette cards, but, you know, it's reminding me of, like, when we were kids, things in cereal packets and stuff like that. There'd be little toys and things like that. That seems to have died out, doesn't it?
Toys in cigarette packets were good.
Yeah, yeah.
I just want to show you the picture of this cigarette card, because I don't think I've seen a smugger man.
Oh, it's a photograph. It's photorealistic.
It's photorealistic, I think, yes.
Yeah, so I'll describe it. It's this, he does look young, kind of thin-faced man, you know, smart suit and tie, and then there are, like...
Look at the machine!
Yeah, there's the machine. Bits of that machine look like the front bit of a Dalek.
It's very Doctor Who-ish. In early Doctor Who, he could be fiddling with a TARDIS.
Yeah.
But look at that. If you just want to punch him, wouldn't
you?
Is that
a euphemism? It's because he's wearing no clothes.
He looks so smug, though. So smug.
We'll put pictures of that on our Patreon site, patreon.com/TQMpod, so you can go and have a look, and some of the other stuff. That's not how I expected the card to look. Weirdly, I did have this image of it being almost like a Houdini poster rather than, but you're right, that is a scientific style presentation rather than a fantasy performance magician presentation of a card, isn't it?
It is. And his invention not only gets number 4, but Stephen himself gets card number 129. So he appears twice.
Why twice?
Because he's so popular.
Right.
They describe
collect them all.
The wonder worker who was brought to reality one of the fairy tales of your childhood by means of a ray that he can project from his apparatus, of which is a secret, he is able to render people in the field of his ray absolutely invisible.
So I'm assuming those, someone like him who is very popular, they probably print less cards, so you have to keep trying to get them, do you? There's probably something in that.
You probably do, yeah. Yes. You have to keep smoking, different times, but embassy focus points.
Right.
Remember those?
No.
You used to get one in a pack of 20, or is it two? It's like, it's obviously double the amount in 20 than you got in 10.
Yeah.
And 4,000 you needed for a sandwich toaster. I remember that. But, you see, this is the embellishment. The subject of the experiment is conscious of nothing but a slight tingling. This is how they describe Mr. Stephen Pribble,
yeah,
and his work. Extraordinary stuff. And, you know, it works for Pribble. He bounces from Budapest to Vienna to London as a young mystery genius for a full year in that 1935 period.
I also love the fact that he's officially saying, I'm only doing these shows and charging and all that stuff to fund my research. It's perfect narrative, isn't it?
A completely perfect narrative. And it spawns all of these. I mean, it's not just newspaper articles. It is things in, like, scientific publications. I've got something here.
I'm really glad you said that, because that was what was going through my mind. I understand why a tabloid might go, I don't really care if it's true or not. It's a great story. Don't care if he's a magician or not.
Yeah.
It's a better story if he's not. But, you know, if you can kind of scientific publications or journals, that's a different thing.
Well, you remember that phrase, Arabian Nights Wizards?
Yes.
Here's another article that was syndicated to scientific publications that uses that phrase, and it also says invisibility at last. This one contains a before, during, and after picture of the invisibility ray. I'll just show it to you now. You see the man is disappearing?
Yeah. He kind of looks like he's going a bit shadow,
mm-hmm,
shadow person. And then there's the third picture. But
he's
although
just
that third
gone.
Picture is separate, which is quite interesting.
Yes, well, there might be good reason for that.
Yeah.
And there's even a picture of the scientific apparatus that's doing it, although they just look like boxes, right? Of course they look like boxes, yeah, with wires coming out of them. So I know what you are thinking, Peter and the audience. Was it all done with mirrors?
I wasn't thinking that, actually. No, I thought mirrors might be involved. I thought, like, the box being an optical illusion that, you know, puff of smoke and a something screen can come down went through my mind, you know, with some lighting effect, so it looks like it's happening gradually. Something like that was going through my mind.
Well, yeah, that's almost exactly what was happening. Pribble, sort of maybe unaware that the audience might pick up on this, patented what his machine was. It's a black background, and then you put that inside a box. Then you have something which serves as a reflector. Then you angle the glass at 45 degrees, and the objects could be made to fade away as the light source changes. Now, I've got the figures here. It's pretty, pretty simple. It turns out that Pribble... So, actually, I should just say, I've got a good reference here. Pepper's Ghost. Do you know the Pepper's Ghost?
No.
So Pepper's Ghost, probably a lot of you listening will be familiar with it. You use it on stage shows. It's basically, you can project the image of something onto, like, say, a piece of fabric. So you can make... you can make somebody appear to be walking across the stage, but actually all it is a projection of their image from below the stage onto a piece of muslin cloth, for example.
Right.
Basically, he's doing the same thing in this box. He's just shifting the light source so that it looks like what is happening is that the object is disappearing. As he changes the light source, you get more reflection off the mirror from one side than you do the other. That's the simplest way I can put it.
Right, right.
And it turns out that outside of his press agent and his stage shows, Pribble and indeed his competitor from Hungary both kept saying they hoped to sell their invention for the stage. They basically hyped the modern science to get them into the papers in a way that no magician ever could. So this was a deliberate attempt to sell a piece of patented stage magician equipment to basically to illusionists who, you know, would have paid handsome money, and they would only do it if they thought that there was something, you know, it wasn't just a backroom shop, because it's a simple device. It isn't worth thousands. You can build it yourself.
The other thing that's going through my mind with this, and I know there are varying views on this person, it's reminding me very much of Uri Geller.
Yeah.
Because of, I know some people do think he's got paranormal powers. I'm not sure. But if you go with, no, he's a brilliant illusionist, mentalist and magician. What he hit on was his style of presentation. Do you know what I mean? That I can do these amazing feats. Still does it brilliantly today, and it was not like anybody else was doing it, that kind of, you know, Paul Daniels or Vegas style performance. So I loved that about this guy. He's kind of hit on, let's do it from a slightly different approach.
Yes.
And then great showmanship.
And he nearly makes it. He nearly makes it because, like, he's literally in the papers and he's going around the world showing this thing off as a science experiment, not as a trick. Because if he could have got a trick, he wouldn't have done it. That, I will say, though, that this I learned this from this article I was reading. It points out that no magician could get in the papers that way. Apparently there's one exception, a chap called Dosif Dunninger.
Good name.
It is. And apparently he was the premier magician of the age, a successor to Houdini. And apparently anything that he said got in the news. And on April 13th, 1939, he made the front page of the Detroit Free Press with the headline, "Magician to Show Navy How to Make Fleet Invisible." The battleship, he said, would be invisible until it approached within half a mile of the enemy, no matter how powerful the glasses they train on it. Any ship could be outfitted with the device at the comparatively negligible cost of about $3,000 or $4,000 a ship, he declared. Absolutely no mirrors are used. It obviously not true.
Oh, right, okay.
Not true.
So again, was that just a publicity stunt?
It was a publicity stunt, yes.
If we go back to the box and this, the whole disappearing illusion, the machinery that you showed me a picture of, the kind of Doctor Who set type stuff.
Yes.
Did that do anything? Did that kind of power the machine, or was that just theatrics?
It moves the mirror.
Right.
It moves the mirror.
So it was almost hammed up.
Absolutely.
You know, some redundant bits or whatever. It's like, yeah, okay.
And the bit when they say they can feel the teddy bear in the box, that's because the teddy bear is still in the box.
Right.
So they're putting their hand into a different part of the mirror section.
Right.
So they're just going through a slot and the teddy bear is still there.
Yeah, because you'd kind of reach around for it, wouldn't you? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm very surprised that nobody just yanked it out. That's what I would have done.
So the teddy bear in that example doesn't move. There's no there's no hidden compartments.
No.
It's literally mirrors, light, and just, you know, a visual trick, visual illusion.
That's right. And it isn't clear that when he performs the trick on a person, whether he says to them, don't tell anyone, or whether
they
he keeps
even
the
know,
illusion.
Though?
Well, maybe not, although they might look down at their own hand and go, but I can see my hand.
Yes, but you might go with the narrative, I can see myself, but they can't see me. Be quite freaky, actually, if you did believe in it and you're sat there going, I can see my hand, but the audience can't see me. That would be really strange.
Very Emperor's New Clothes.
Yeah.
And particularly if anyone did decide to get naked and walk around the audience, like, a very bad move.
Can I come back, actually? Was it him or was it the other guy who did the bit with the feet dancing?
It was the other guy.
Right, so that's probably some kind of plant that they've used to kind of, or again, just a fake story, maybe.
No, it probably would have worked because it depends on how you have your box set up. So we don't know, like, we know what his patent is, and I'll tell you some of his patent words in a minute because they deliberately make it difficult to understand, so that it's basically a salesman's trick, I think, to kind of be selling snake oil. But it is possible, like with the Pepper's Ghost trick. I mean, Pepper's Ghost, you can just Google it on Wikipedia. You could absolutely do that trick without any problem at all. You could make just feet dance across the stage. It's literally just where you point the light. It's not a problem at all.
Yeah.
I believe that is possible. It's the sort of thing that they were doing to just show that it was real. The person who wrote this article did go to the trouble of extracting the wording for the patent. And I'll just read you the first line because you can see that, well, it says, the present invention relates to an apparatus by means of which persons, objects or the like, normally visible on a stage, in some exhibition space or in a portable apparatus, all of which have surroundings which remain visible, can be made gradually invisible and again visible. That is to say, the person's objects or the like appear to disappear, then reappear. And it goes on like that again and again. It's like there's a page of this.
What I'm thinking is his motivation, because we know, don't we, that magicians' tricks, especially complex ones, you can pay a fortune for them, can't you?
Oh, you can.
To kind of get them built and all that kind of stuff. So he's obviously gone, somebody's going to work out how I do this. I'm going to try and put a patent on it, but I need to be...
Oh, he was expecting someone to know. He was expecting someone to work it out, yes.
But he's written in an opaque way to try and keep the narrative of his act at least a little bit opaque.
And the narrative of the skill required in the design of the machine.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah, yeah.
Yes. Because he's kept it so vague that anybody who built a device that was similar would be infringing his patent.
Right.
So it is possible, like, though he's talking about a box, Pepper's Ghost is usually done with a projector and some material on a stage. But I don't, you know, I mean, obviously it's out of patent now, and whether he was granted a worldwide patent, I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah.
But it's just a brilliant magician's trick. But that
he must have spent ages coming up with that wording, mustn't he?
Oh, yes.
How much do I give away? You know, even if it's just a trick, let alone keeping this illusion that it works as a...
Well, absolutely. And the skill of it is all in that... Well, they call it press agent. I mean, it's just his PR. The skill is all in the PR.
I love that.
Well, I love it as well. I was so disappointed because I really felt like he'd invented a trick and someone had disappeared and he'd gone, oh no, have I killed them?
Yeah. Well, and it's funny, when you were telling that story about the person disappearing, and like I think you said it, Romeo and Juliet type thing, it was like, again, I thought in my mind, that sounds like creepypasta. It's too good to be true, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yes, absolutely, absolutely. Just as a sign off on this, I just thought I've got it in my notes here. Our man who tried to make the Navy ships disappear, he later claimed that he'd given his idea to the government as a gift, but there was no evidence that it was even tried. And the US was not in the war when he shot his mouth off to the press. And he was conspicuously quiet about it after Pearl Harbor. So we, like this author and other press that I've read about it, it just seems like he was just trying to show off and get some of the attention. I don't think he really even had a trick that he was going to share with them.
Right, so it was a pure publicity stunt.
It was, it was.
Although, maybe it's coming from that kind of narrative. I do, I mean, there are things today, aren't there? There are ways that you can paint a ship that it creates a mirage effect that you can't see it.
It creates a brain confusion effect, absolutely.
I'm sure I've seen something similar with tanks that you can do as well.
Well, it's the same thing on new cars when you put those, you know, the camouflage on new cars and you can't tell where the bumper is and such.
Yeah.
It's the same kind of deal. But it's, you know, it's like an optical illusion.
It's such a bold approach he used, setting it up as a scientific endeavour because, yeah, it's risky, that, isn't it, that you're going to get found out quickly. He probably thought he'd get found out at some point. But you can see where the narrative, you know, it's reminding me, not that he was a magician, but it's reminding me of Tesla and people like that, of there's that mysticism around scientists who've invented stuff and, yeah, lots of...
Well, there is at that time. Yeah. You remember the guy with the N-rays who thought he could see the human aura?
Yes, yes.
And everyone believes him until it's pointed out that it's not true.
Yeah.
And you just think that any journalist worth their salt would have just, like, said, well, explain how the machine works. It's not good enough to say you don't know.
Yeah.
Let me see inside it. Let me see what it looks like when you take it apart. But nobody did that.
Well, again, it's back to that. We've talked about it before, haven't we? When we were talking about werewolves and Cannock Chase and stuff like that, that in a way it's easier. Maybe the journalist doesn't want to know because the story's better without it, and we won't dig too deep because, you know, we'll shift more papers than we will, hey, we expose, you know, scientist who says he's a magician. You know, we can do that later. Let's get the story out there first, you know.
Yeah.
Sell a few papers, even if you don't come back to it.
I think that's it. And I think this goes back to that sort of... I don't even know that this is yellow journalism. I think this is perhaps people just believing... Yeah. This idea that there are scientific miracles coming and you've got to jump on it. And you put professor or doctor in front of someone's name and it goes through.
I love the fact it kept interchanging as well.
Oh, yeah, well, exactly. That shows you the copy, sort of the iterations it went through.
That's amazing. I'll tell you what, though, I'm not... I know you said there's a bit of you that's kind of disappointed about that bit of the story about the disappearance, but in general, I'm not disappointed that there is any doubt that this guy didn't invent something that made people invisible. I love the story as it is. It's beautifully crafted, clever, his approach was really good, and he pulled it off, even in scientific publications. Brilliant.
Yes, no, 10 invisible girls out of 10. I always like to finish these things off with a scientific footnote. So to get a scientific footnote, I visited online, obviously, the International Society of Optics and Photonics. That's easy for you to say.
Wow.
And a quote from a gentleman who is director of materials research at the Toyota Research Institute of North America, Debashish Banerjee. I do apologise if I've mangled that. I hope that is how you say it. So he's asked about whether it's possible to make a Harry Potter cloak. In terms of optical cloaking, it's a very nice idea to allow light to go around an object. But the problem is, light is not one wavelength. He explains that how light travels in a medium depends on the properties of both the light and the medium. If we want to see visible cloaking for each wavelength, we have to change the medium separately. This means that the metamaterials used would have to be designed to accommodate every wavelength of visible light individually to guide them around the intended object to be cloaked. It is just too difficult of an engineering task, he states. Because of this major limitation in metamaterials, sometimes scientists have decided to explore older, simpler ideas in the quest for broadband cloaking. Ray Optics, and that's not a man called Ray Optics.
That's a great stage.
Hi, Ray Optics. So this is basically what I described at the top of the show. It's basically people sort of pointing light around things, but they're not doing it. So he's talking about doing it in a way that you could be measured by, like, on infrared, on ultraviolet, and you still wouldn't be able to see it. He's pointing out that this has a very limited, it's like basically you can hide it from humans, but you can't really make it invisible. There's probably, you know, a dog could see it or a machine could see it. That's what he's basically saying.
That Harry Potter was a very lucky boy.
He was, but, you know, maybe...
It shows why even in the wizarding world there was only one invisibility cloak.
Yeah, well, if Mr. Banerjee had had his way, then he probably wasn't visible in all the optical spectrums.
And it, bringing me back to the invisible man with his gun, in my understand, my bare little brain understanding of that scientific explanation you just gave, the gun itself would affect the way the light works, wouldn't it?
Correct.
So even if you could see it, you'd see it would screw up the whole thing, even if you could make it work in the first place.
Correct. Whilst looking around this, I think probably the best we could hope for with current knowledge, it would be something akin to the Predator cloaking device.
Yeah.
You can see something, but you're not sure what it is.
Yeah. And of course, when it moves, it the whole process has got to start all over again.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Amazing. I really enjoyed that. And I hats off to that showman, let's call him.
Invisible hats off.
Invisible, yeah. If my invisible hat is off to that showman, that's brilliant.
So now I've done that, should I get dressed?
Yeah, put your clothes back on.
Okay, I'll go and do that.
What a great episode. Well, you said to me last week, I did say, what we got next week? And you did kind of hint at invisibility. And when you started, I was like, there's going to be like really kind of paranormal, unsure stories of invisibility. It's one of those that, no, it's a showman, but I love that. It's just fascinating, really fascinating.
Well, it's a good one. While I look for my other sock, I'll just tease that we are doing the long-anticipated field trip tomorrow.
Yep.
We'll let everyone on our Patreon site know when we've done it so as not to jinx it.
Maybe we'll post a couple of bits when we're there.
Yes, exactly.
To, you know, at least some photos so you get an idea of where we're going. Interestingly, I did mention the location in this episode, so I'm not mentioning it again. So that gives you a little bit of a clue. Well, if we survive our field trip, we will be back next week. But for this week, we're going to disappear, aren't we, Ben?
We are, like Pepper's ghost. I can still feel you.
That sounds so wrong.
I know. Just passing my sock. I'll see you next week.
Bye.
The quantum mechanics.